Look at you right now. Even at this point now, I have the epidural in my back and I keep pressing it. I keep pressing it. But I'm feeling my legs. My legs were ripping. That's what I felt. I felt like my muscles were torn. And honestly, in my mind, I was just like, am I ever going to be able to walk again? Like, they were paining me so bad. I didn't even understand what the epidural was for because I was still feeling stuff.
Okay. Can I ask you something? How well prepared were you to have this baby?
That's
you
what I'm study? Saying.
Okay, okay. It's because still, of the situation. You didn't really expect
I
to
didn't
get this
think,
far.
No, yeah. Still encouraging me to just give birth.
Mm-hmm.
And I was okay. And I was the one who was like, well, no, at this point it's God's will. Mm-hmm. If I made it this far, like, I wanted to know how much further can I really make it?
Mm-hmm.
And then even at that, they were just like, well, we don't know, you know, the survival rate. Like, we don't know what's going on. And things were, I was doing okay. Mm-hmm. You know, they were taking... Another thing, they were taking blood twice, like it at first was three times a day and then it was twice a day. They were only doing it twice a day because my veins were collapsed. 17 different IVs. I looked like a crack addict. I had you can see all the spots of where my IVs were in my arms to the point where they were like, okay, well, and the anesthesiologist was like, if I can't find anything in your arms, because this was the second time he had come to put in an IV, he was like, we're going to have to look in your feet. Mm-hmm. Mind you, at this point, my feet are swollen. What were you going to find?
Yeah.
So it was really hectic. And no, I was never prepared to have a baby. Even when the doula came and said what kind of pregnancy you were, like, you wanted to look into having, like, still at that point,
You're just focusing on surviving and, you know, living day to day, seeing what's going to happen the next day.
Yeah.
That's totally understandable.
Yeah. And
that's
and
understandable.
Another blessing that God brought to me was Yawande, because I didn't tell anybody at this point and I had to tell her for some reason. And the girl came and saw me the next day or two.
Mm-hmm.
And she was just like, so what do you want now? Like, what do you want to do? And I was just like, I don't know what I'm supposed to do. She's like, okay, well, we have to have a baby shower for you. I'm like, a baby? Like, what are you talking about? I had to beg the doctors to let me out for a day. It actually wasn't even a day. It was a couple of hours. And Vicky and Roman came and they had gotten me. They showed me that they got the baby seat, the car seat and the stroller. And I was so happy. I was so happy to get that. And they're like, okay, let's go. But then the nurse was like, oh, well, we need to check to see if you were okay. And apparently I was having contractions. And then the nurse like, are you sure you're okay? And I'm like, yeah, I'm good. I'm good. But I've been feeling this consistent pain like throughout the whole pregnancy. So I was just like, yeah, I'm good. But my friend was telling me, she's like, Amanda, you're having contractions. So I'm like, no, it's okay. We going. We getting out of here. So I was like, we ain't staying here. She got a whole community of people to help me. I don't want to start calling out names because I don't want to forget anybody. But I am just so, I'm still overwhelmed. People I didn't even know helped me with Westcan. I didn't need to get him anything for months, at least the first 4 or 5 months. Mm. I was just so blessed in that way.
Beautiful.
But, again, I was not prepared at all. And that was another fight that I had to give these doctors. I was like, you're telling me that I can give birth to this child and he may or may not survive and it's nothing for him. I don't even have a towel to wrap him in to leave the hospital in. And that was my fight, you know? And I really had to push for that. So yeah, they let me out for a couple of hours. And then I came back and and then, you know, the rest followed through. But no course. Actually, thanks, Yawande. She showed me a video of her birthing her daughter.
Okay.
And I was like, I was a little traumatized, but, you know, like, I mean, I watched A Baby Story on TLC. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you watch the movies, but when you actually see it, it's like, mm-hmm. oh, no, that's about to happen to me. There's no mm-hmm. rewind. There's no, mm-hmm. oh, I shouldn't have had sex that day. There's no, like, damn, I should have had protection. No, it's like, okay, no, I'm really going to have this baby. Like, mm-hmm. Yeah. So fast forwarding back to actually being in active labor, I had no idea what was the next step. And mm-hmm. I didn't feel like I was being coached on what I should feel, what's going to happen now. There wasn't really much of that.
So was the doula there?
My doula was there. She was there for most of the time. Mm-hmm. And so was my supporter.
Did you communicate with your doula? Did you tell her your concerns? Did you ask her questions?
No. And okay. The thing with her too is that she had like a companion. Like she was working with someone. And that other person seemed a little more experienced than her. And I had gone into early labor prior to this, right? Mm-hmm. And the two of them were there. So now okay. that I was actually in active labor, it was only that one doula that was there. I didn't know if the other doula was coming or not.
Okay.
So, no. And I don't know what to ask. I don't know what to be saying at any point. Mm-hmm. I was just
I was wondering basically the same thing that you're asking me. Like, what's going on? What's about to happen? Why mm-hmm. am I feeling this? Questions like that. Because it seems to me that your doula didn't necessarily know your concerns because there was a lack of communication, maybe?
Right. Let me tell you something. Mm-hmm. It was only after I gave birth and she told my supporter that I was her first client.
Okay.
That was where okay. the mess up is. I was very upset about that. And I understand why I didn't know anything. I don't know what to communicate in these times.
Why were you upset?
To know that
because
I was her first client.
Because she didn't have experience?
Yes, because I felt like I could have been better supported.
Like I said, there's two things I want to say about it. Well, first of all, she probably went through a training. In order to become a doula, you have to have a training. You don't just wake up one day and say, hey, I'm a doula. So whether you're her first or her 10th person that she's working with, she should know what to do. I trust that she did what was right, you know. Also, I don't think you can really be mad at her because you have to give them a chance. Everybody had a first client one day, at
I didn't
one
have
point,
to be it,
you know.
No. I didn't have to be it.
Okay, you felt that she wasn't experienced enough.
The most I got was her rub. Like at one point, she was just rubbing my arm.
Mm-hmm.
That's all. Like, and I had to ask her to stop because I'm like, you're not helping me in any way.
Okay.
I, to my understanding, like I thought a doula would just calm you down
mm-hmm.
and just, you know, help you control your breathing mm-hmm. and. I didn't get that stress
yes.
relief.
Yes. Well, those things you also have to be very vocal about because it's not every woman labors the same way. I've worked with women who do not want me to touch them. They don't even want to be around me. They just basically just call you when they're mm-hmm. ready to push. You know, other women, they need to be massaged all the time. And usually when you're working with someone, you already express those things. So the doula knows exactly what she wants to do. And if it's not beforehand, then at least during labor, like you have to communicate. Another thing I wanted to say before, when it comes to your birth plan, again, there's only so much a doula can do, especially in a hospital setting. Like, we fight so much with the doctors and the nurses because between us and the pregnant woman, like there's an understanding. They have a birth plan, and we're doing everything to make sure that that plan is respected. But the doctors don't necessarily agree that that's the safest thing for the mother. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you shouldn't really blame her. I'm pretty sure she tried. I don't know her. But as a doula, our responsibility is to try to support the mother as much as possible.
I don't blame her for anything. I don't feel...
that she was very helpful?
Right.
Okay.
So another major issue for me at this point is... You know, like, I have no sense of time. And I know my supporter, like, was getting really, really exhausted. And he was like, you know what? I'm going to get going. Just give me a call when it's time and I'll be here, you know?
Okay.
They left. My doula was still with me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how much longer after they left. And all of a sudden, everything started happening.
You mean they both left?
No, the doula was still there.
Okay.
All of a sudden, they were like, well, the baby heart rate is going down.
Mm-hmm.
So they wanted to flip me. They were flipping me from side to side to have the baby's heart rate go up.
Mm-hmm.
I have a question for you. Mm-hmm. When the baby is going through the canal, let's just call it the canal. I don't know if that's the right term for it.
Mm-hmm.
Is the baby's heart rate not lowering?
It does. But there's still, you know, there's an alarming amount or an alarming number. And then there's also the, you know, the acceptable number. So I don't know which one was in your case. But it does lower a little bit. Yes, you're absolutely right.
So there was no one, they did not say what the alarming amount was. Nobody's telling me what the number was. They were just saying that the baby's heart rate is a little bit low.
Were you attached to a monitor?
Yes.
Could you see the numbers
on
the screen?
No, but even if I saw numbers, I don't know what any of these numbers mean. I don't know nothing.
Yes.
So they were like, you know what? At that point, too, another doctor came and he was like, I just want to make sure that your structure, so this is like my vaginal structure, was wide enough that I can push a baby. So he checked me and he was like, you are perfectly fine. You're clear. She's good. She can push.
Okay.
Mind you, this is the same, like that doctor had left. The resident that was dealing with me is the same resident that's been scheduling me to have a cesarean.
Mm-hmm.
So she was just like, you know what? No, we have to go. We have to have an emergency cesarean. We have to get you to go. And I'm like, I don't want this. I don't want this. Another thing that alarms me is that when I had my baby and I had to go to the bathroom for the first time and couldn't get up, so I'm calling these nurses to come and help me. And they were like, well, you know, just get yourself out of the bed. They didn't even know that I had a cesarean, which throws me right the hell off. Mm-hmm. Like, how do you not know? Mm-hmm. So when I told her, I'm like, I can't feel my stomach. I'm like, I'm cut. And they put, like, they uncovered me and they're like, oh, they're like, we didn't know you had a cesarean. And the woman looked at my son and removed his hat, because you know how babies have a hat. And she was like, well, his head is shaped as if he was in your canal. Like, we, so I'm concerned at how deep was, you know.
Yes, that was going to be my next question. When the doctor left, did he mean that you were fully dilated? Were you ready to push? And he said you can totally have a vaginal birth.
Nobody said that I was fully dilated at any point. It was just taking super long. I think that I had stopped at like 6 or 7 centimeters.
Okay.
Like, it was just at that point, it just kind of stopped dilating.
Yeah, but the conditions were not ideal, sorry, for you
right.
to
to continue to, yeah.
Yeah.
But no, when the doctor was checking, he was just like, oh, we just wanted to make sure that, you know, like my structure, like the bone structure and stuff, like I wasn't too tight to try and rip a child through me. Like they said that he would come through no problem.
Okay.
So I'm very confused at, exactly. So I'm very confused at what point did they feel that I had to get an emergency cesarean?
Mm-hmm. You know, you keep talking about that, the same doctor who's telling you, who's asking you to have a C-section. I'm starting to wonder if he, exactly. Was it a he or she?
Was both. It a he or it was, she? It was a man and a woman. They were okay. On different shifts.
So. Well, maybe... You know, maybe they were being honest. Maybe they were just not comfortable with you having a vaginal birth, in the sense that maybe they felt that it would be too risky for them as well. That something might happen, and you know, maybe they just honestly thought that a C-section is much easier.
There was a concern about my eye blood vessels.
Mm-hmm.
Because you know, I already had, like, I'll call it injured, but you know, like, I already had surgeries on my left eye, and they're like, well, you know, when you push, you have to, you're gonna have blood vessels that are gonna pop, and you know, like, we're just concerned about that, and so on and so forth. I wasn't concerned about it, so why would mm-hmm. they be?
I get your logic.
Yeah. There's just a lot of unanswered questions. Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, you know, I'm trying to give them the benefit of the doubt. But on the
I understand. You know,
C-sections are still big business, you know.
Exactly.
They get paid more, so... It could be that as well, but I'm trying to give them the benefit of the doubt. Maybe
so because mm-hmm. the story still continues.
One day, I'm gonna understand. Zaya. Unsure what the balance held, I touched my belly, overwhelmed by what I had been chosen to perform. But then an angel came one day, told me to kneel down and pray, for unto me a man child would be born. Oh, this crazy circumstance, I knew his life deserved a chance. But everybody told me to be smart. Look at your career, they said, Lauren, baby, use your head. But instead I chose to use my heart. Now the joy of my world is in Zion. Surely come, see life for you, my prince, has just begun. And I thank you for choosing me to come through unto life to be a beautiful reflection of his grace. See, I know that a gift so great is only one God could create. And I'm reminded every time I see your face that the joy.
Okay, how many people in here have ever been in love? I know none of the guys gonna raise their hand, but how many of y'all ever been in love? But I know none of the guys been in love. We don't get in love, right? Oh, let this black man right here tell what his idea of love is. Because now all the time we hear young black men talk about love. About your personal definition. Don't tell me what Webster thinks. Huh?
Do everything for that person.
Okay, everything like what? Explain. Let him talk, come on. If I asked him to talk about a fancy car, he'd be right on point. But we want to talk about love. You can do it. What do you think? You said you love somebody. You should know why you love them, right?
Where they at.
Uh-huh.
Where they carry themselves. Stuff like that.
Okay.
They with their boys, hang with their boys, whatever. And they just stand out. It's like sometimes it don't even matter like what they wear or what they look like. It's like that way. You know that you want to talk to him because he stands out. It's like he got a glow or something.
That's deep.
What I'm talking about.
I thought that was a beautiful point. Anybody else want to deal with that?
And sometimes, like when they try to act funny in front of their boys, and they get around and they say they love you, they can't love you. Cause love wouldn't do that.
More to love than that.
Love is not funny.
What's going on, y'all? You know who it is. It's your girl, Miss Ben, and it's Black History Month 2021. So you know I got you in the loop for what's going on, the weekly virtual events. This year, my theme is Heal, Black Girl, Heal. We're going to be talking about my pregnancy experience, the diabetic retinopathy, the COVID healing effect, colorism, and what's really going on with the rent inflation and tenant rights, and a whole lot more. So keep it locked right here on CKUT 90.3 FM.
So bless your heart who came and again captured my son and I, not even 24 hours of giving birth. Mm-hmm. I have those pictures right at the front door. there was three other beds, but these women were rotating in and out of the room. 2-3 days they were spending. I gave birth on the 2nd. I only left on the 9th. Do you know why?
Mm-hmm.
They were still taking blood. 2 days. So by March 7th, I called it quits.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, I'm leaving this hospital. I am over it. I want to go home. I want to be a mom. My life has completely changed. I didn't think that I thought I was going into the hospital in December. I thought I was going in there to miscarry. And now March, I'm leaving with a full baby. Okay? And the nurses were in there, two lovely nurses. They were really nice to me, but they were really trying to convince me to give blood, to keep giving blood and to stay there. Like, you know what? The more blood you give, the more the doctors can let you know that they can check on you and make sure it was okay.
Oh.
I said F no. And I cried and I said, I've been here too damn long. I'm fed up. I want to go the hell home.
Mm-hmm.
I started to refuse to give blood. They're like, you're not going to let me draw blood. I said no.
Mm-hmm.
I said no. On the 9th, they said, Amanda, here are your papers. Here is this. You can go home.
Ashe.
If I said that months ago, I'm sure I would not have had the certain experience I did. But let's just be real, okay? I had 3 free meals and 3 snacks a day. I was warm. I was worried, but I did not have half of the worry that I would have had if I was home by myself, you know? So there are blessings in disguise, but there was a whole heap of messery that I did have to deal with. And I share my story today because there are so many women that are out there and just don't know. They don't know.
They don't know that they have rights, you know, that they can refuse, that they are allowed to speak up for themselves, and that they don't have to go through anything they don't want to.
Girl, had I have had that abortion.
Yeah. Good thing you didn't, right? Good thing you didn't. Good thing you listened to your instinct.
There was, I remember sharing this story with the group once, and there was a girl who asked me, she's like, so how did you live your life every day, you know, day to day, walking around, knowing that there's a child in you that, you know, is not like, how was I working mentally? And, you know, the only response I could give her was, growing up, my mother told me the floor can't clean itself. I still had dishes to clean. I still had to cook. I still had to eat. At the time, I had started massotherapy school. I still had to go to classes. I still had to take my exams. I was in the hospital bed doing homework. I was on phone calls trying not to fall asleep. I even had a class in my room. The students came to the hospital and we had a live class. I still did my studying. I don't even know how I did it, but I had to do it. And my child is still here, healthy as hell, healthier than me.
Maybe that's why they needed so much blood from you, you know?
Well, you know what?
Like, how?
Exactly. Like I told you, my blood sugars were supposed to be 20 and 30 and 40, and they were 2 and 3. I was barely taking insulin. Another thing, I did not know my blood type. I'm an O negative. I can save the world, but nobody can save me. I can't take blood, but from just anybody. So I feel like they were just withdrawing blood, taking a little bit of it and being like, okay, yeah, she's good. And the rest, saving people out there. I don't mind if you had my consent, but we also got to be mindful about...
We don't know half of the things that they
that
do.
We're signing. Girl, wait until I talk about my diabetic retinopathy, my eye surgeries. Like, that's a whole other mess. That's for... I'm going to be saving that for a week or two, but yeah.
Oh, I'm looking forward to that show. I'll definitely listen. Ah, man, you went through a lot. You went through a lot and you're still here. But you know what they say? What doesn't kill you?
Blood clot is stronger. Excuse my language. But, you know, I really realize I can't keep that to myself. I don't know if it's because I'm Black. I don't know if it's because I'm in a certain financial back bracket. I don't know what, why I was given the circumstances that I was given. But I made it through, and I am of a disservice to not share my story today. And I know the importance of the company that you keep. And some people are going to take this a little personal because there's certain people that I had to cut off because their energy just did not align with what I was going through.
Yeah, you have to do, especially when you're pregnant, you have to keep your vibe high.
You know, one thing is the superstition of, you know, if you're super depressed and you're down and you're negative, then your baby's going to come out with that energy. Hell no. That is not my case.
No, if you're lucky, girl.
And maybe it does happen, but I was depressed the whole time. I was barely eating in the hospital at a certain point. They had to send a psychologist for me. I wouldn't even talk to that person because it just wasn't working out. But that's not the case. I feel what really had me going was the fact that every morning I woke up And I said, thank you for allowing me to experience another day as a mom. Mm-hmm. If this is the most pregnant I will ever be in my lifetime, because mind you, I was told at a very early age that I could not bear children.
On top of that.
Wow. And I was told, if this is the most pregnant I can ever be, thank you mm-hmm. for allowing me to enjoy it one more day. Just one mm-hmm. more day.
Mm-hmm.
Every morning I woke up saying that. So mm-hmm. thankful.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Gratitude is the highest form of love. It was all love that you were feeling. You did it, girl. You did it. And I'm so grateful that you're sharing your story, because it needs to be told for sure, because a lot of women don't know their rights. You know, do you know how many women are in the same position as you are right now and who could use a story like this? Who would love to hear what you have to say? The amazing thing is that this is being recorded. People can listen to it again in a year from now and 10 years from now. Like, I would definitely say share this story for sure. If you have to keep talking about it once a day, 10 times a day, whatever, to whoever wants to hear it, I support you all the way. It's so necessary. Thank you for being so brave. It's not easy being a woman, and it's definitely not easy being pregnant, giving birth, even when everything goes well, you know, and you're pregnant and you're giving birth. It's not easy. But then on top of that, dealing with all the things that you had to deal with, and you came out strong, you gave birth to a healthy baby boy, kudos to you. Chapeau. Vraiment respect. Respect à toi. Respect à toi, maman. You have nothing to be ashamed about. Trust me. You spoke up for yourself. You did what was right. You saved your son's life. You gave life to him. No matter what everybody was telling you, you went against the odds and you did it. You did it. You have so much to be proud of, really. Don't ever doubt your strength. If you ever do, just listen to this show again. If you did not know who you are, well, you know now. You are a superwoman. Trust me.
Strengthen me. Why's that? 'Cause I am super.
I know that you are putting like a little something together where mothers can talk about their birthing stories. How can they get in contact with you? If there's a phone number or an email that they can speak with you and go take this process.
Yes, sure. So as a doula, I find it extremely important that women can share their story, because oftentimes I hear women who have given birth 10 years ago, 20 years ago, and they still talk about the pregnancy with either pain or, you know, something is still not fully healed. Mm-hmm. And I want to create a platform for the women to talk about it. So whether it was 20 years ago or whether you had your baby 2 weeks ago, I want to hear the stories. I want to hear stories, successful stories. I want to hear stories that didn't go as planned. I want to hear stories about women giving birth at a hospital, at the birthing center, at home. You know, whatever it is, I want to have so many different types of stories so that those women can just let it out, share the story. And on the other hand, so that listeners can actually also learn from other women's experiences. So whoever wants to share their story, they can contact me by email. My first name is Bobette. So B-O-B-E-T-T-E healinghands@gmail.com. So the email address is Bobette.healinghands@gmail.com.
Man, that is a new topic, birthing traumas. Like, as much of a blessing it is, it is also pretty stressful and traumatic on us. And you all know that this is Heal, Black Girl Heal. And as much of a blessing as my son is to me, I am still healing from the whole process. And I know that the beginning is just speaking up and speaking about it and allowing myself to be angry where I was angry, allowing and, you know, just acknowledging the sadness that I overcame.
And give yourself time, you know, don't be too hard on yourself. You fought way harder than most women would, you know. You knew that you were allowed to say no, and you did say no many times.
Oh, no, hold on. I didn't know. I didn't understand consent until now. And I didn't know that I could say no. I just chose. I was just choosing to say, hell no. Like, I just know I wasn't doing
it. Enough is enough.
Yeah.
But you did it. You did it. And I have a feeling that for you, the healing journey can finally begin. So give yourself time. Don't be too hard on yourself. It could take a year. It could also take 10 years. It doesn't matter how long it takes, as long as you start the journey. You owe it to yourself and you owe it to your beautiful son.
Go wrap it up. Let us play some final songs. And let us all stay blessed. Happy Black History Month. Keep it locked on CKUT 90.3 FM.
Today's show is dedicated to Fannie Lou Hamer, who was born in Montgomery County, Mississippi, on October 6, 1917. She was the 20th and last child of sharecroppers. Hamer and her siblings all grew up in poverty. As a result, she began working, picking up cotton with her family at the age of 6. By 12, she completely left school to work full-time. In 1944, she married Perry Hamer and toiled with him at a Mississippi plantation. Since she was the only worker that knew how to read and write, she was also the plantation timekeeper. In 1961, when she was 44 years old, Fannie Lou Hamer went to the hospital for the removal of a small uterine tumor, which is now thought to have been a fibroid. While she was under anesthesia, she was given a hysterectomy without her knowledge or consent. This medical procedure was common and known as a Mississippi appendectomy. Oftentimes, many women went in believing they were going to have a specific surgery for a persistent medical concern, such as a lower abdomen pain, but experienced forced sterilization while under anesthesia. Teaching hospitals frequently performed these unnecessary hysterectomies on poor Black women as practice for medical students. Before 1960, there were approximately 70,000 forced sterilizations that occurred in the United States. A large percentage of these victims were either people with cognitive disabilities or poor women of color. According to Hamer's research, 60% of the Black women in Sunflower County, Mississippi, where she received the forced sterilization, were victims of the same procedure while they were giving birth. This atrocity and personal experience became a pivotal point in Hamer's life and ultimately contributed to her decision to join the civil rights movement. In the summer of 1962, Fannie Lou Hamer decided to attend a meeting held by the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, a group that encouraged African Americans to vote. That same year, Hamer, along with 17 others, showed up at the Indianola Courthouse in order to register to vote. This attempt was not successful and led to the harassment of Hamer and the volunteers. That same night, she was fired and kicked out of the plantation where she had been working for over 2 decades. However, this only solidified her resolve to vote and helped other African Americans to do the same. Fannie Lou Hamer became an active participant in the civil rights movement. She organized voter registration drives and relief efforts, all of which put her in harm's way. Throughout all of these ordeals, Hamer was threatened, beaten, and arrested. At the jailhouse, she and several other women were brutally beaten, leaving Hamer with a blood clot in her eye, permanent kidney failure, and leg damage. Her activism never wavered. For instance, in 1964, Hamer co-founded the Mississippi Freedom Democratic Party and announced her bid for Congress. Even though she lost, she still managed to bring the whole nation's attention towards the struggle for civil rights. Hamer's efforts were not in vain. She increased business opportunities for minorities and provided childcare and other family services. In 1976, she was diagnosed with breast cancer. She continued in her fight for civil rights in spite of being sick. Hamer passed away on March 14, 1977. She was buried in the Fannie Lou Hamer Memorial Garden in Ruleville, Mississippi, where her tombstone is encrypted with one of her most famous quotes. "I am sick and tired of being sick and tired." In 2004, the Fannie Lou Hamer Cancer Foundation was established in her honor, which works to prevent and decrease the burden of cancer in the Mississippi Delta region. This biography was provided by the Resilient Sisterhood Project.
It is easy to keep your head up when everything went well.
Mm-hmm.
But keeping your head up after everything went wrong, now that's a whole different ballgame.
You look at me like I'm unfamiliar. Acting brand new like you never knew that you like them thick. I've been carrying this weight in a world beneath these braids, and I'm confused. Would you take the pain that came with all the parts you wanna claim for you? You want my thighs, you want my stride, but not this melanin. You want my hair, but you don't care for this complexion. I'm a black woman. I'm a black woman. Cornbread fed, sweet tea sipping, Nubian queen with the skin that glistens. I'm a black woman. 16 sitting on a cold floor in the corner after school. Recovering from your cover up when you told me I wasn't right for you. It wasn't hard to believe, 'cause when I watch TV, I would never see a leading lady look like me. Familiar package with less pigment, I nicked it, it's just reality.
Hello, dear CKUT listeners. As of March 16th, CKUT Studios will be closed until further notice. The programming on our airwaves will consist of a mixture of recent CKUT archives, new pre-recorded segments, and other relevant special programming. Our upcoming funding drive will be postponed until further notice as well. Thank you for understanding that we are taking these measures to protect the health of our staff and community members. Love, CKUT.
Spread your wings,
one-stop Caribbean cuisine for the best in Caribbean dishes. Come visit us and enjoy our specialties such as oxtail, jerk chicken, roti, and many more. Ask about our $8 lunch special on any chicken plates from Tuesdays to Fridays, 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Also try our famous crispy fried chicken dipped in our special barbecue sauce. You can order online through your preferred restaurant apps or call 514-365-3636 or enjoy a 10% discount on all in-store pickup. This don't apply to promotions. We are located at 334 Saint-Jacques in Lachine. Visit us today. One Stop Caribbean Cuisine, Chef X, new location.
Blessing up a flow like a river. Blessing up a flow like a river.
You need quality sounds? Tune into CKUT 90.3 on the frequency modulation band radio. www.ckut.ca on the internet. Streaming audio, archive shows, and information.
CKUT.
Hi, my name is Debi, storyteller, dub poet, partly raised in Montreal, Montreal, Mount Real, launching my new CD 333. You are listening to CKUT 90.3 FM.
There is this thing. Do you realize
what is
there is this thing? Do you realize
consciousness is affected?
There is this thing on. There is this thing going on. Do you realize
our consciousness is affected?
There is this thing going on.
What is called
the news brought to you live.
Hi, welcome back to Unfit to Print. This is CKUT on 90.3 FM, broadcasting not live, but still from Montreal. My name is Amy Lloyd.
And I'm Maya Ibbotson.
Today we broadcast from the Jiuzhaige, the traditional territory of the Haudenosaunee and the Anishinaabe Nations.
Today we will be playing three interviews, starting with Natalie from 4R Kids, followed by Greg Mickelson, a former McGill Environmental Studies prof, and lastly, Myrtle and Matt, who are representatives and founders of the Climate Pledge Collective. All these interviews took place after, during, or before last Friday's Fossil Banks No Thanks event. Friday's event was a call to action organized by a variety of organizations demanding Canada's top five banks divest from the fossil fuel industry. We spoke with our guests about greenwashing, Indigenous land sovereignty, and McGill's 2025 Climate Action Plan. We want to issue a content warning as this upcoming segment discusses environmental racism and brief mentions of colonialism. Don't go any